If you are listening to this podcast, it means you are searching. Searching for someone who understands you. Someone who gets you. You are yearning to be understood and to belong. Welcome to the Someone Gets Me podcast, where we help smart, talented, and sensitive people navigate an often insensitive world. Let's welcome your host, ambassador, author, speaker, and mentor, Diane Allen. Diane has the experience and knowledge to educate and inspire, as she has been there and understands your unique intensities and their challenges.
Hey, everybody, it's Diane, and I'm going to talk today on this podcast about gifted people getting sober. This is a topic that has been brought to my attention over many, many years that I think I have some ideas that can help transform your life, whether you're a family member of someone trying to get sober or whether you yourself are gifted and trying to get sober. There are certain things to always pay attention to. They're not often taught in traditional settings. And so today I would like to cover some of my thoughts, my ideas, some ways to approach getting sober and being happy from a multifaceted viewpoint. This morning, before 8 o'clock, my phone was ringing by some old clients of mine who have family members who are very successful in their own way, but are finding themselves really struggling with drinking too much, making poor decisions in their life. So this person who is an adult professional person can go to work, is doing what they need to do on some level, but on the other level, they're just miserable and they're crying out for help. And so I decided to do this podcast in honor of this particular family and all the thousands of families that I work with currently and have worked with over my career, so that hopefully this podcast will inspire and support and let people know that there is hope and there is a way to get help in a way that works for gifted people. Years ago, I was the director of a program that I created that was working only with gifted people trying to get sober. It was very successful, and that was great. And now I've moved on to doing more individual work and more custom things to help gifted people. So first, let me give you some definitions in the way I operate and look at things. First of all, for me, the word sober is not just about not drinking or not doing drugs. It's about having a sober mind, being able to think, being able to plan, being able to remember things, feeling calm most of the time so you're not agitated and alienating others. So if you're not sober, you're usually agitated, forgetful, having a difficulty in some area of your life. Often it's work or family, one or the other, and then as it progresses, it gets worse. So you can be impaired or intoxicated, if you will, from too much caffeine, from overeating, where you eat so much it shuts you down, right? You can be impaired and intoxicated from the adrenaline rush of fear or anger or pride or control. So being sober of mind means being present and being aware and acting from the inside out. So those are my definitions to start with. Now the word recovery, people say, well, get into recovery. Well, for me, recovery means to feel better. That is an improvement. So it would be to feel better, I'm recovering from the flu or a cold, or I'm recovering from having an intoxicated and impaired mind because of my actions or my behavior. No matter what the topic, all of these ideas actually work. However, most frequently, we're going to talk about sober as in not doing things that are harming you, right? So I want to tell you a story about this young person who is struggling with this. The person that I'm talking about is about 40 years old. We'll give him a name. Let's give him the name of Fred. And Fred went, you know, to high school and was very successful and went to college and did very well and partied and drank with all the rest of them. And that's what a lot of people do. And it doesn't seem like there's something really wrong with it, except for the fact that about 10% of the people doing that are not only harming their life then, but they usually turn into alcoholics or addicts, about 10%, they say. But what also happens when somebody is overusing mood-altering chemicals during their young years, like their late teens, what we find out is that there's lasting brain difficulty and things that arrest some development that have to be caught up on. So there's lots of factors, not to mention kidneys and liver and the body. But what about the mental part? The first thing any type of addictive behavior does is try to separate the person from their connections. It's the same, very similar anyway, to domestic violence. So Fred, going to college, having fun, partying and playing, sooner or later started distancing himself from his more gifted intellectual peers who were moving into graduate school and focusing forward. And instead, he chose the peers who were happy-go-lucky and partying and having a good time. Now, he enjoyed that part of it, but he also realized his mental stimulation and the great conversations that his more gifted friends were having with him were getting less and less. They were not as active in his social life because he was drinking so much, but nobody said anything to him, and he can look back on it now and see that. At the time, he says he didn't, and I believe that. So Fred then gets out of school, gets a great job, starts making a lot of money, feeling very successful, still drinking more than Fred needs to be drinking, and still able to hold it together. And because he's gifted, he can outthink most of the people around him and outperform them using less of his skill and ability. So the illusion is, I'm still okay. I'm still, everything's fine because I'm holding down a job and I'm making a lot of money and I have friends and I'm doing all these things. But what Fred will report, and I think most people report, is that inside there's this loneliness and this darkness and this fear. And when they go home at night, it's very, very sad. So Fred started fighting with some depression and anxiety, as he called it, still not seeing that using mood-altering chemicals was in the way, still not seeing it. And so he got help for depression and anxiety, and it worked for a little while, but not really, because if you're not being sober in your mind and clearing up your thinking, it's hard for anything to work, really. So time went by, and pretty soon he ended up getting himself in trouble at work and, you know, getting in some arguments with his family. And so sure enough, Fred calls me. I say, okay, well, come on in, Fred, but you have to, you know, not be drunk when I see you. And we had a long conversation, and he told some of the same story I just told you, which is a theme that many people can relate to, I'm sure. Fred was miserable. He was living in a quiet misery that was palpable to me. I could feel it as he spoke to me. Now, he was charismatic, and he was friendly, and he was gregarious. And so his coworkers and his family and his girlfriend, none of them really knew how miserable he was, because he was a great actor. And I often laugh and say, you know, sometimes people like Fred make better actors than the people in Hollywood sometimes, because they have to really do it all day, every day, and it's exhausting. So Fred finally dropped his guard a little bit and started saying, you know, I drink too much and I do all these things, these adrenaline things, driving fast and everything, because I feel everything so intensely at the same time. And sometimes I just want to break. Sometimes I just want to feel nothing. So he learned over time that alcohol gave him a break from the intensity and the overexcitabilities of his emotions and his mind, helped stop his mind from racing, gave him a little bit of a social lubricant so that his introverted self could really go and connect with other people, or at least have the perception of it. And his story progressed, right? What initially was helping him turned out to be harming him. And that betrayal of that action and of the alcohol itself is a very big issue for people to deal with in new recovery, and it's very rarely mentioned. And so a smart and very intense and overexcitable person could beat themselves up. So I'm here to say it's not about beating yourself up. It's about what? It's about realizing that what you started out trying to solve a problem with your mind needed something different. You didn't know better, but now you do know better. So it's time to do something different, right? And so Fred really resonated as I explained to him about overexcitabilities and giftedness. He had never heard that word used around him other than people saying he was smart, and he was. And so as I gave him the constellation and the picture and what it felt like and what it is like to have a gifted brain trying to become sober in thinking and sober in mind, that he began to make the changes he needed to make. One of the big changes is to, I say, put down the shovel, quit putting things in your system that are harming you. Even when you feel off kilter or upset or unsure, that's why you have somebody guiding you through it who understands the power and the intensity of our emotions. So Fred did all the research and he did all the things an intellectually overexcitable person would do, and he started making some changes. Now, he didn't do it perfectly, and there were times when Fred wanted to give up, and I kind of was prodding him along, reminding him that he's here on purpose with a purpose. And so Fred got going, and now Fred is in an even better job doing more neat things, and he's not altering his mood. He's not over drinking caffeine or smoking cigarettes anymore. He's stopped all the other mood altering things. And actually, he has learned from me and other people how you can alter your mood by using your breath, and it's free and there's no bad side effects. So there's lots of ways you can give yourself some relief without harming yourself. So recovery means to feel better, and sober means to have your mind intact, no matter what the cause. And so though Fred was using alcohol, many people with overexcitabilities use other things to kind of check out or cope with the high intensity that there is. For example, one of the things that gets my brain off is too much noise. And it's very difficult for me when it's noisy, noisy, noisy. And sometimes I use white noise machines, or I use my headphones and meditation music, or I go find a place that's quiet out by the water or in nature so I can take a break. And that's required. Otherwise, I start feeling agitated and angry and short-tempered and irritated. And in those moments, I'm not sober in mind, even though I'm not drinking alcohol and I'm not doing drugs. My brain is still hyper-lit up from the upset. So a gifted person trying to sober up their mind so they can use it for their benefit and the benefit of others takes a lot of work from lots of different angles. Now, the work frees you from your self-imposed prison that half the time you didn't know you were in. So Fred is now happier. It took us a few months to get him going, but now he's doing great. And he still has all of his intensities, all of his overexcitabilities. He still struggles sometimes with being a guy who's really sensitive and really smart at the same time. And he has the physical overexcitability where he's always having to do something. So he's out running, or he's out playing tennis, or he's out doing different things. But today he has people in his corner who get him and who understand what it's like to be on the journey and being overexcitable and gifted and trying to make these major inner changes. What happens with Fred and other people is they begin to see the beauty of who they really are. I remember the day he smiled for the first time, like that authentic grin, that aha grin that came across his face. It was so beautiful because he got it. He got on that deep core soul level that he is here on purpose with a purpose, and that his work is only a piece of it, that it's his heart's desire, it's his vision. And as he follows that, he's fulfilled. So interestingly, a lot of his heart's desire is not his career that makes his money. It's all the other things he does. He loves, loves, loves working with children. So now he's coaching a soccer team, and he's helping out at the local children's hospital, and he's doing things to connect with children and young people and inspire them in a way that brings them joy and fulfills him. And then he goes to work during the week and does his corporate kind of work, knowing that he has a well-rounded ability to be fulfilled. So that's the story of Fred. And I wonder what your story is about trying to have a sober mind, because too much anxiety or fear make us intoxicated by those neurochemicals. So it's not just about alcohol or drugs. It's about the inner chemistry. Are you sober in your mind? So I'm hoping that this episode has given a little bit of light on the bigger picture of having a sober mind. And so now I'd like to share a little bit about different things I teach people and different actions that you could take for yourself or maybe share with somebody who's trying to get their mind a little bit more focused in a way that's healthy. See, being hyper-focused is the other extreme. That's not healthy either. So one of the things that I teach everybody is to make sure you're breathing. Now, you've heard that on other episodes from me, is to breathe, and you've probably heard it lots of other places. But yet still, when I say to people, really, no, take really long, deep breaths. Air is your friend. That's right. Air is your friend. If all of us took a big, deep breath all at the same time, there'd still be more air. It's necessary for our life. And too often, I have clients who get out of breath because they're forgetting to breathe while they're doing whatever the exciting thing is they're doing. So they cheapen their experience. They harm their body for not having enough oxygen, and they make everything harder because they forget to breathe. In fact, I had a person who was in my retreat recently tell me that he doesn't understand how I'm able to just see when someone's breathing or not. And I laugh because I say, it's obvious. Your body's not moving. And so if you're one of those people, right now, put your hand on your belly and breathe. Take a few long, deep breaths. Go exhaling first. That's how you start a breath. Now inhale and exhale. Inhale and exhale. Breathing. Air is your friend. You require oxygen to live. It's important that you breathe. So in the beginning, when you're trying to clear your mind up, take 3 or 4 different times during the day and just stop for a minute and take 3 or 4 long, slow, deep breaths. And allow your body to settle just a minute. And then what you'll find is your brain will be a little more clear. You'll be able to focus better, and you'll have sober thinking, so you'll be able to take on the task you're doing with even better precision and more success. So breathing, air is a really big one when you're trying to get sober. The second big thing is to really look at what you're putting in your body. Like a lot of people think, well, it's okay to drink a lot of caffeine to make up for it, or it's okay to eat a lot of sugar because I'm craving sugar. Well, it's true you're probably craving sugar, but that's because of a protein deficiency, not a sugar deficiency, first of all. And second of all, white sugar turns into chlorine in your liver, and it follows the same pathway as cocaine does, so that's bad. A better thing to do for your nutrition is to eat high protein that's very clean, have a lot of greens so that the nutrition can get in, and also to make sure you're hydrated and having lemon and doing those things that are loving and nurturing to yourself. As your body's healing, whether it's physically or emotionally or mentally, it's better to be nice to it. Eat things that are not so difficult to digest, right? Do things that are helpful to yourself instead of difficult. And then your body will thank you for it. And another key is this. If you eat something or drink something and you get acid indigestion, don't eat or drink it anymore. Or at least wait until you've healed and then see. That taking the purple pill or doing whatever people do to stop the effect, your body is trying to tell you, ooh, I don't like that. So listen to it, okay? Now, there are some herbs you can use to help settle your stomach, but it doesn't make it okay to keep eating and keep drinking things that are harming you. Not if you want to live, not if you want to be a recover person who's happy and joyful. You have to want to live, right? And one of the other big suggestions I have is to spend time in quiet nature every day, whether you're hugging a tree or enjoying the sun or the moon or just being outside, reconnecting with earth, putting your bare feet on the earth, or breathing in the beauty of the sunrise or the sunset, or just going outside and listening to the birds, or better yet, planting a garden so you're digging in the earth. All of those things bring you back to you, because running up into your head and trying to figure everything out and moving fast works against you. It's much more effective to have a complete experience of life where your body and your mind and your emotions and your spirit all get fed every day. So sometimes just being in nature that extra time really pays off. Then what I would suggest doing is have somebody in your corner, people to talk to and people that you can relate to. So find other gifted people who are trying to make changes in their lives. Find people who are spiritually aligned with you. Find somebody like myself who's a gifted mentor who can show you and ask you the right questions. Where a mentor is somebody who has the knowledge and experience, but also can ask good questions and help you expand your opportunities. So doing things like that, seeking solution, those things will really help you. And last but not least, love yourself. Really love yourself. Have a lot of compassion for yourself. And the compassion is for that great adventure of being human. You've been on a long road like we all have, and we're just walking each other home. So it's okay to struggle. It's okay to know not what to do. It's okay to try to sort it all out. And you're not alone. There's lots of people on the road with you. It's just sometimes we can't see them. So love yourself. Do something kind and gentle for you that's not detrimental, that's not mood altering or addictive or harmful. But be kind every day, whether it's an Epsom salt bath or whether it's journaling or maybe getting somebody that can be in your corner, like a mentor or somebody that you can talk to, something so that you are connected to other human beings on the same journey you are. And believe me, there are lots of people. When I opened that treatment center I mentioned, everybody around me thought that I was never going to have too many clients, that it would be empty. And that was not the case. Gifted people and smart people and overexcitable people need even more support, and they need different things than the average bear, because overexcitabilities and the unique asynchrony of the brain require it. So if you're one of those people or you know somebody, I hope this podcast has helped with some solutions. Feel free to reach out to me in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group or through my website, visionsapplied.com. I'm happy to do anything I can to support you or head you in the right direction, because really, someone does get you. So until the next episode, always remember to love yourself and keep your face toward the sun so all those shadows are behind you and you can see the beauty of your journey. You are here on purpose with a purpose, and it's time to say yes. Blessings.
Are you tired of searching for someone who understands you? Join our Facebook group, Someone Gets Me. In this group, you will be able to connect with others who are intense, sensitive, smart, talented, and wanting to be understood. Diane shares her insights and teachings, and you can connect with others. Join today.